the middle of the night, there was a knock on my pane. I got up, opened the window, and recoiled. There stood Venus in furs, just as she had appeared to me the first time. "Your stories aroused me," she said. "I'm tossing and turning, and I can't sleep. Come, and just keep me company." "Right away." When I entered her room, Wanda was huddling at the hearth where she'd fanned up a small fire. "Autumn is setting in," she began. "The nights are already quite cold. I'm afraid it may displease you, but I can't toss off my fur until the room is warm enough." "Displease? You scamp." "You do know, madam." I threw my arms around her and kissed her. "Of course I know, but how did you develop this passion for fur?" "It's innate," I answered. "I already showed it as a child. Incidentally, fur excites all high-strung people, an effect that is consistent with both universal and natural laws. It is a physical stimulus, which is just as strangely tingling and which no one can entirely resist. Science has recently demonstrated a kinship between electricity and warmth. In any case, their efforts on the human organism are related. The tropics produce more passionate people. A heated atmosphere causes excitement. The same holds for electricity. Hence the bewitchingly beneficial influence that cats exert on highly sensitive and intelligent people. This has made these long-tailed graces of the animal kingdom, these sweet, spark-spraying electric batteries, the darlings of Muhammad, a Cardinal Richelieu, a Crebillon, a Rousseau, or a Wieland. So a woman wearing fur is nothing but a big cat, a charged electric battery. "Certainly," I replied. "And that's how I account for the symbolic meaning that fur took on as an attribute of power and beauty. It was in those terms that earlier monarchs and ruling aristocracies laid exclusive claims to fur in their clothing hierarchies, and great painters laid exclusive claim to it for the queens of beauty. Thus, Raphael found no more delightful frame than fur for the divine curves of Fornarina, and Titian for the rosy body of his beloved." "Thank you for the learned erotic treatise," said Wanda, "but you haven't told me everything. You associate something very singular with fur." "Indeed I do," I cried. "I've already told you repeatedly that suffering has a strange appeal for me, that nothing can so readily fan my passion as the tyranny, the cruelty, and, above all, the infidelity of a beautiful woman. Nor can I imagine her without fur. This woman... this strange ideal derived from the aesthetics of ugliness. A Nero soul and a Phyrenees body." "I understand," Wanda threw in. "There's something domineering, imposing about a woman in fur." "It's not just that," I went on. "You know, madam, that I'm super sensual, that everything is rooted more in my imagination and nourished by it. I was precious and overwrought when I got hold of the legends of the martyrs at age of 10. I remember reading with a horror that was actually delight the way the martyrs languished in dungeons, were roasted on grills, were shot through by arrows, boiled in pitch, thrown to wild beasts, nailed to the crosses, and they suffered the most dreadful fates with something like joy. From then on, agony, gruesome torture seemed like pleasure, especially when inflicted by a beautiful woman. Since for me, all that was poetic and demonic had always been concentrated in women. Indeed, I practiced a downright cult. I saw sensuality as sacred. Indeed, the only sacredness, I saw a woman and her beauty as divine, since her calling is the most important task of existence, the propagation of the species. I saw woman as the personified of nature, as Isis, and man as her priest, her slave. I picture her treating him as cruelly as nature, who, when she no longer needs something that has served her, tosses it away, while her abuse, indeed her killing it, are its lascivious bliss. I envied King Gunther, whom powerful Brunhild tied up on their wedding night, the poor troubadour, whom his capricious mistress sewed up in wolfskins and then hunted like a wild prey. I envied Sir Sirad, whom Sharka, the bold Amazon, cunningly snared in the forest near Prague, dragged back to Castle Divin, and then, after whiling away some time with him, she had him broken on the wheel. "Disgusting!" cried Wanda. I only wish you would fall into the hands of a member of that savage sisterhood. The poetry would vanish once you were in the wolfskin, under the teeth of the hounds, or on the wheel. Do you believe that? I don't. You've taken leave of your senses. You're really not very bright. Perhaps. But let me go on. I greedily devoured stories about the most abominable cruelties, and especially loved pictures, engravings that showed them. And I saw all the bloody tyrants who ever sat on a throne, the inquisitors who tortured, roasted, slaughtered the heretics, all those women whom the pages of history have depicted as lascivious, beautiful, and violent, such as Lucretia Borgia, Agnes of Hungary, Queen Margot, Isabeau, Sultana Roxelane, the Russian Tsarinas of the 18th century. I saw them all in furs or in robes trimmed with ermine. And so now fur arouses your bizarre fantasies, cried Wanda, and she began coquettishly draping herself in her splendid fur mantle so that the dark, shiny sables flashed delightfully around her breasts, her arms. Well, how do you feel now? Are you already half broken on the wheel? Her green, piercing eyes rested on me with a strange, scornful relish as I, overcome with passion, threw myself down before her and flung my arms around her. Yes, you've aroused my most cherished fantasy, I cried, which has been dormant long enough. And what would that be? She placed her hand on the back of my neck. Under that small, warm hand, under her gaze which fell upon me, tenderly, inquisitive, through half-closed eyelids, I was seized with a sweet intoxication. To be the slave of a woman, a beautiful woman whom I love, whom I worship. And who mistreats you for it, Wanda broke in, laughing. Yes, who ties me up and whips me, who kicks me when she belongs to another man. And who, after driving you insane with jealousy and forcing you to face your successful rival, goes so far in her exuberance that she turns you over to him and abandons you to his brutality. Why not? Do you like the final tableau any less? I gave Wanda a terrified look. You're exceeding my dreams. Yes, we women are inventive, she said. Be careful. You find your ideal, she might easily treat you more cruelly than you like. I'm afraid I've already found my ideal, I cried and pressed my hot face into her lap. Not me, certainly, cried Wanda, hurling away the fur. Striding about the room and laughing, she was still laughing as I went downstairs, and while I stood musing in the courtyard, I could still hear her malevolent and hilarious laughter. So, should I embody your ideal, said Wanda roguishly when we met in the park? At first, I was at a loss to answer. The most contradictory emotions struggled inside me. Meanwhile, she sat down on one of the stone benches and played with a flower. Well, should I? I knelt and clutched her hands. I beg you once again, be my wife, my faithful, honest spouse. If you can't do that, then be my ideal and fully, without restraint, without qualification. You know that I will give you my hands in a year's time if you are the man I am looking for, Wanda countered very earnestly. But I believe you will be more grateful to me if I make your fantasies come true. Well, which do you prefer? I believe that everything lurking in my imagination is in your nature, too. You are mistaken. I believe, I went on, that you enjoy having a man entirely in your control, torturing. No. No, she cried briskly. Or maybe so, she pondered. I don't understand myself anymore, but I must confess something. You've corrupted my imagination, inflamed my blood. I'm starting to enjoy all those things. Your enthusiasm when you talk about Pompadour, a Catherine the Great, and all the other selfish, frivolous, and cruel women is entrancing. It sinks into my soul and drives me to emulate those women who, despite all their evil, were slavishly worshipped during their lifetimes and still work miracles from the grave. In the end, you'll turn me into a miniature female despot, a pompadour for domestic use. Well, madam, I cried. If that's in you, then yield to your natural tendency. But don't go halfway. If you can't be a decent, faithful wife, then be a devil. I was exhausted, excited. The closeness of the beautiful woman seized hold of me like a fever. I no longer know what I said, but I do recall that I kissed her feet and finally picked up her foot and placed it on the nape of my neck. But she swiftly pulled it back and stood up almost angrily. "If you love me, Severin," she spoke quickly, her voice sharp and imperious, "then never talk about those things again. Do you understand? Never again. Otherwise, I could really..." She smiled and sat back down. "I'm utterly serious," I cried, half raving. "I worship you so much that I am willing to tolerate anything from you as the price for being near you for the rest of my life." "Severin, I warned you again." "Your warning is useless. Do what you like with me, but don't push me away entirely." "Severin," Wanda retorted, "I'm a young, frivolous woman. It's dangerous for you to submit to me so completely. You'll actually wind up as my plaything. Who will protect you if I abuse your insanity? Your noble character will protect me. Power corrupts." "Then be corrupt," I cried. "Kick me." Wanda slung her arms around my neck, peered into my eyes, and shook her head. "I'm afraid I won't be able to, but I'll try it for your sake. Because I love you, Severin, as I have loved no other man." The next day, she took her hat and her scarf and had me accompany her to the bazaar. There she looked at whips. Long whips with short handles. The kind used on dogs. "These should do the job," said the vendor. "No. They're much too small," replied Wanda, casting a sidelong glance at me. "I need a big..." "For a bulldog, no doubt?" asked the merchant. "Yes," she cried. "The sort of whip that was used on rebellious slaves in Russia." She searched and finally selected a whip, the sight of which left me somewhat queasy. "Well, goodbye, Severin," she said. "I have to do some more shopping and you can't accompany me." I said goodbye and went strolling. On the way back, I saw Wanda emerging from the furrier shop. She beckoned to me. "Give it some further thought," she began delightedly. "I've never made a secret of the fact that I was captivated chiefly by your earnest, pensive character. Now it does intrigue me to see this earnest man at my feet, completely devoted, downright enraptured. But will this intrigue last? A woman loves a man, but she mistreats a slave and ultimately kicks him away." "Well, then kick me away when you're fed up with me," I retorted. "I want to be your slave." "I realize that dangerous faculties lie dormant in me," said Wanda after we walked a few steps. "You're awakening them, and not to your advantage. You know how to depict pleasure, cruelty, and wantonness in such tempting colors. What would you say if I tried my hand at it and it started with you, like the tyrant Dionysus, who broiled the inventor of the iron bull in his own invention in order to see whether his wailing, his death rattle, actually sounded like the bellowing of a bull? Might I be a female Dionysius?" "Be one," I cried. "Then my fantasy will be fulfilled. I belong to you for better or for worse. The choice is yours. I'm driven by the destiny that is in my heart. Demonic. Overpowering." "My darling, I do not wish to see you today or tomorrow. Not until the evening of the following day, and at that point I want to see you as my slave. Your mistress, Wanda." "As my slave" was underlined. I reread the note, which I received early in the morning. Then I had a donkey saddled, the right animal for a scholar, and rode off to the mountains, hoping to numb my passion, my yearning, and the magnificent nature of the Carpathians. I was back again, tired, hungry, thirsty, and above all, in love. I quickly changed clothes and knocked on her door several moments later. "Come in." I entered. She stood in the middle of the room wearing a white satin robe that flowed down her body like light, and a scarlet satin casabaca with a rich, luxuriant ermine trimming. In her powdered snowy hair was a small diamond tiara. Her arms were crossed on her bosom. Her eyebrows were knitted. "Wanda!" I hurried towards her, tried to throw my arms around her to kiss her. She took a step back and scrutinized me from top to bottom. "Slave? Mistress," I knelt down and kissed the hem of her robe. "That's the ticket." "Oh, how beautiful you are." "Do you like me?" She went to the mirror and viewed herself with proud delight. "I'm going insane." Her lower lip twitched scornfully and she gave me a mocking glance through half-closed eyelids. "Give me the whip." I peered around the room. "No," she cried. "Just keep kneeling." She stepped over to the fireplace, took the whip from the mantelpiece, and, smirking at me, she made the whip whistle through the air. Then she slowly tucked up one sleeve of her fur jacket. "Wonderful woman," I cried. "Silent slave." She suddenly glared, indeed wildly, and struck me with a whip. A second later, however, she tenderly put her arm around my neck and leaned compassionately towards me. "Did I hurt you?" she asked, half embarrassed, half anxious. "No," I retorted, "and even if you had, pain that you inflict on me is pleasure. Just whip away if you enjoy it." "But I don't enjoy it." Again, I was seized with a bizarre intoxication. "Whip me," I begged. "Whip me ruthlessly." Wanda swung the whip and struck me twice. "Is that enough now?" "No." "Seriously? No?" "Whip me, please. It's a pleasure." "Yes, because you know very well that it's not serious," she replied. "You know I don't have the heart to hurt you. I'm repelled by the whole business. If I were really the kind of woman who whips her slaves, you'd be horrified." "No, Wanda," I said. "I love you more than myself. I'm devoted to you in life and death. You can seriously do anything you please to me. Whatever your wantonness suggests. Severin!" "Kick me," I cried and threw myself down in front of her, my face on the floor. "I hate all play acting," said Wanda impatiently. "Well, then abuse me seriously." A sinister pause. "Severin, this is my last warning," Wanda began. "If you love me, then be cruel to me," I pleaded, picking up at her. "If I love you," Wanda repeated. "Very well." She stepped back and contemplated me with a dark smirk. "Well, then be my slave and feel what it means to be put in a woman's hands." That same moment she kicked me. "So how do you like that, slave?" Then she swung the whip, straight and up. I tried to stand. "Not like that," she commanded. "On your knees." I obeyed and she began whipping me. The strokes fell swiftly and forcefully on my back, my arm. Each blow cut into my flesh and continued burning there, but the pains delighted me, for they came from the woman whom I worshipped, for whom I was ready at any moment to lay down my life. Now she stopped. "I'm beginning to enjoy it," she said. "That's enough for today. But I'm devilishly curious to measure the extent of your strength. I feel cruel lust to see you quaking and writhing under my whip, and finally to hear you moaning, wailing, on and on until you beg for mercy, and I ruthlessly keep whipping until you faint. You've aroused dangerous forces in my character. But now, stand up." I grabbed her hand and pressed my lips upon it. "What impudence," she kicked me away. "Out of my sight, slave."